If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers split a pair of games this weekend to get back to 22-22. On Friday night, they came out of the gates hot. It was a really good first quarter, which has been kind of the opposite of what a lot of this season has been. And then starting in the second quarter, one of the most god-awful performances that you could see, like just across the board. And I also thought Brooklyn has... one of the only things that they have on their team are scoring guards that can hit pull-up jumpers, which is, I think, one of our biggest defensive weaknesses. And so I think it was a combination of just a trash effort and then a legitimate weakness of the Lakers roster, but an awful night. Then on Sunday, for the first time this season, here's a wild stat. The first time this season, neither Torian Prince nor Cam Reddish started the game. The Lakers started with Austin, D'Lo, Rui, LeBron, and AD. This was the lineup that I was hoping to see us try at the beginning of this year. And the starters play very well against a bad Portland team, get a wire-to-wire victory. Then at the end of that, there were some post-game images that we may talk about later that is setting social media on fire today. But Mike, your view from the ground from a weekend of a Lakers team that kind of showed off their split personality this weekend.
Darius and I record the pod on Friday morning, Pete, without you. And while saying that we don't want to do it, are essentially looking forward to the Clipper game in a way. Like, the Lakers should take care of business, right, against Brooklyn and against Portland. And the way that you just mentioned, they started that game in the first quarter. Yeah, it was a continuation of how they had played against OKC and Dallas. And then not everybody on the team, but a few players just stopped competing at all defensively. And Brooklyn kind of decided, oh, we're in Los Angeles. Oh, they're not going to play. Okay. Let's go. And they just started attacking. And often in one-on-one type setting, like, that is not a connected team right now in Brooklyn, just like we saw Portland is not a connected team right now for their own reasons. And so big picture wise, the Lakers have won three of their last four at home, but that's not good enough relative to what they had just done the previous couple of weeks. Right. And it just, I was thinking about the usual suspects, and I think we're past the spoiler deadline of this one. It was a movie in 1995, but there's a big twist in this movie. And at a certain point, man, everybody figures out, once you realize what the plot twist is, and then you kind of talk to your friends, oh, I knew when I saw the coffee cup drop, uh-huh, right? It's Kaiser Sose, but it's like, oh, the team, it has revealed itself. And I wonder, Darius, have the Lakers sort of revealed themselves in the very fact of just losing that game to Brooklyn on top of what we've seen up to that point? Or has there been a little bit of a corner turn with the starting lineup change, and Brooklyn is kind of the exception, and it happens sometimes, you toss it out and you think about the three wins in four games. I tend to think more that this team is the reason that they're closer to 500 is because they can't sustain, whether it's the effort and the energy or the lineups or whatever that is. And I think that the team is closer to that than to get being afforded the benefit of the doubt. But I wonder how that hit you in concert of what had happened leading up to those two games.
I think we are beyond spoiler range for usual suspects. The twist that I prefer for this version of the Lakers is more the twist that you'll find in Fight Club. And so I'm not sure, like, on Sunday they were Brad Pitt, And on Friday, they were a little bit too much Edward Norton.
Yep.
I was pretty frustrated after the Nets game, or not even after the Nets game. Like, I think I might have had a string of like 15 or 18 straight texts within our text thread, basically complaining about everything. I was particularly upset with LeBron, honestly. Like, I'll just say it. I thought LeBron's defensive effort against the Nets was pretty rough. And I thought that when combined with the lineups that the team was playing and the ask on LeBron to basically play an important defensive position, I just thought that that had cataclysmic effects when you combine it with what the weaknesses are of the Lakers defense in general, right? And how they were being attacked with Cam Thomas and even Spencer Dinwiddie, and to a certain extent, even Mikal Bridges, based off of how much the Lakers were switching 1 through 3.
Lonnie, Dennis Smith Jr., all them guys, yeah.
Just all those guys, right? And so the Nets game revealed a certain amount, to use the parlance that Mike just was, like, revealed a certain amount of stuff about the Lakers. And they are that team. Mike, they are the team that is susceptible to all of those things. And I don't think you can pinpoint and say it's just year 21 LeBron, or it's just the rest of the team not necessarily having enough internal motor to say, like, oh, well, whatever LeBron's doing, I'm just going to do this other thing anyway. And they are also the other team that is the team that they were in the first half of the first, I would say, 18 minutes, like, of the Nets game. And the team that destroyed might be a strong word, but basically took out Portland pretty handily. They are both of those teams. And I'm super interested in this idea of, like, all right, well, we've seen a variety of different starting lineup looks over the year, mostly because injuries have cost the team one starter, and it's forced Darvin to sort of shift things up again. Like, I remember the game that Rui hurt his calf, and Darvin sort of spoke to, this will be the group moving.
Yeah, late December.
Like, this will be the group that carries forward. And
literally the first shift, the guy gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. But whether or not that was actually, like, what Darvin meant with some of his comments or not, that was a pretty hard turn towards, like, all right, like, we're going to be as big as freaking possible with this group. With this new old starting lineup, Darvin again said, this is going to be the group moving forward. And then literally, like, Torin's knee starts to hurt, and it's just like, oh, nope, new group again.
Just to clarify, so the Charlotte game and at New Orleans, the end of December, the as big as possible was because LeBron was playing point guard, Torian Prince then at the two, and then it was like Vanderbilt, Rui, and AD. That was like how they started those two games. And then so now, right, the switch was you have the smaller backcourt with Russell and Reeves back in, and then Rui being at the three. So no Vanderbilt, Prince being injured, and, you know, Reddish available but didn't start and came in off the bench. So just to clarify those.
And so after Rui got hurt, though, Pete, they went back to Austin. So it wasn't like, oh, we're just going to play, like, bigger again and just insert Cam, for example,
or
instead,
Wood or something,
right?
Like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, they basically went with another skill guy who could sort of handle the ball with, well, not sort of, but Austin can handle the ball. But Rui is sort of that in-between guy. And going back to Rui, this game, Pete, showed the difference to me between a player like Prince, who is a connecting player, more defense-oriented, a shooter, versus Rui, who got, like, post-up chances against Anfernee Simons because Portland was switching a little bit, or he got caught on Rui in, like in transition, or they're just like, you have to guard him because we want to deploy.
That was his assignment. Jeremy Grant was guarding D'Lo in that game. And so Portland starts kind of bigger in the front court. So they've got Jeremy Grant, DeAndre Ayton, and then Jabari Walker. And so if you look at their starting lineup, Malcolm Brogdon is the reigning sixth man of the year. Anfernee Simons is a good player. They've got a solid group in terms of talent, right? Obviously Ayton was a number one pick. And Walker is their guy that was assigned to LeBron, right? He's the young guy who on offense, his job is basically to spot up and cut playoff ball, but doesn't have a lot of offensive responsibility. And those guys are often asked to guard the best player on the other team, right? That's what their energy is saved for. And so, but it caught them in that cross match. And so Rui at the three ends up on Anfernee Simons, and we initiated a ton of offense off that. LeBron got a great three off of a skip pass from Rui. He got goaltended and one, got another bucket on Simons. And so it's that combined force, I think, is super important. And one of the things that I'm excited about, I know I was a little angsty in the intro, but one of the things I'm excited about is that starting group has an identity as an offensive group. And then the group that comes in after that has an identity as a defensive group with Cam and Vando and AD. And we saw them get a lot of deflections in those stretches. We saw, some good defense. That group, when it's Austin at the one, was not good. That was the one group that, and this has been a running theme in terms of when neither D'Lo nor LeBron are on the floor, they struggle on offense. But I thought that there was an emergence of an identity from each, both the starting group and the bench group. And a lot of times, a lot of coaches, D, will argue about lineups from the perspective of weak link. I call it weak link theory, meaning that you're only as good as your worst. Your offense is only as good as your worst offensive player. Your defense is only as good as your worst defensive player. And Mike, when you look at that starting lineup, who's the worst offensive player amongst D'Lo, Austin, Rui, LeBron, and AD? Maybe Rui? And Rui's a really good offensive player, right? And he's a really good offensive player who, especially if he gets caught in a mismatch, is going to be a guy that can really exploit that. And so at some point, you just run out of guys. And so let's take a break here. When we come back, let's keep it going.
With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Whether your resolution is to save money, eat better, or stress less, HelloFresh is here to help you do all three. Say hello to your most delicious year yet with fresh ingredients and chef-crafted recipes at a price you'll like, delivered right to your door. Each HelloFresh box is packed with farm-fresh ingredients, and everything arrives pre-portioned right to your doorstep for less hassle and less wasted food. Don't let recipe boredom strike, because HelloFresh has more options than ever. Dig into their biggest menu yet with over 45 dinner options to choose from weekly, and even more market add-on items that suit any lifestyle. There are many things I appreciate about HelloFresh, from how it saves me time by having all the ingredients ready at my fingertips to how organized and easy to follow all of the recipes are. But most of all, I really do like the variety of offerings and all the different flavor profiles in their meal kits. Go to HelloFresh.com/LakerFilmRoomFree and use the code LakerFilmRoomFree for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/LakerFilmRoomFree with code LakerFilmRoomFree.
The starting lineup has been such a measure of focus, and for understandable reasons this year, because they haven't been able to quite get it right. And that's why I keep talking about it. And that's why questions keep coming. And part of it is availability, but I think that the bigger part of it is just deciding upon an identity and deciding upon what is something that's going to work. Because there, I think all three of us could come up with three or four starting lineups that would work. But we all might have a slightly different preference. And I think where it comes down to the same thing that we discussed in the offseason. And if you recall, the basic debate was between Rui and Vanderbilt. It wasn't between Torian Prince or Cam Reddish. And I think for good reason,
right?
Because
they're paid for a reason. And that's the thing too, is guys like Cam and Prince will get backlash from fans. Prince has been fine. He's knocking down nearly 40% of his threes. He's got defensive utility.
As well as he can play.
He makes $4.5 million.
Yeah. So there are some limitations, obviously, and that's what you see that. Not every contract isn't correct, okay, around the NBA, but there is some reason. And I think that on this team, most of the contracts make some pretty good sense relative to what the output is for that money. And so there we go. If I can make an argument for Rui in the starting lineup, I can make an argument for Vanderbilt in the starting lineup, and I don't know that one is right or wrong. I just think that one has to be decided upon then, so that the team can establish some level of a rhythm and then a rotation and so on and so forth. So, in the offseason, Darius and I think we're pretty firmly on the side of starting with Vanderbilt. And Pete, you made a very reasonable point as to why you thought it could be Rui. And I am perfectly happy with Rui. The only concern was essentially point of attack defense and and who is going to be the guy that takes that on and what scheme do you use if not around it. So I kick that then to you. You saw Rui in that group, and what did the tape reveal?
So you're kind of making a decision to win with offense, and you've got to be good enough defensively in a lot of ways. I am skeptical that one of the reasons I wanted to try that group at the beginning of the season, and I'm enthusiastic about this group relative to the Prince group, and we don't know if Prince may very well start that Clipper game, right? But one of the reasons I wanted to try it early on was to see if the point of attack thing was absolutely fatal against decent teams, because I could totally see it being that way. And I'm slightly less enthusiastic about it now because I think there's a good chance, D, that it is when you're playing a good team that you do need at least one guy that can guard on the perimeter in your starting lineup. And so I wanted to see it early in case it didn't work. We could go back to a Vando type of group. I also think Wood could start on this team if you wanted to. I think AD deployed on the perimeter has been a really underutilized thing that we could do defensively over the last couple of years. But nonetheless, that third big in the starting lineup, a bigger type of player I've been really advocating for. But on defensively, they're going to have some issues. And I'm curious your thoughts, Steve, because this is something that you were especially concerned about. I thought they were so good on offense and they've got such good potential on offense that they may be winning that first 6 minutes, 7 minutes, like 20 to 18 type of thing where they don't play particularly good defense, but they're really good on offense. But D'Lo's not going to have it the way he did. D'Lo's been great, by the way. We haven't even brought him up yet, but D'Lo has been fantastic over the last five, was really good in this last one. But what say you, D? I know this is a concern of yours, but like, what do you see out of that group that has Rui in it instead?
So here's the thing is, yeah, we should be concerned about the defense. The defense isn't necessarily going to be great, and the defense is not going to be great because you're starting Rui. It's because you're starting two guards who get targeted by the other team all of the damn time. And so compensate all you want. I personally don't think Taurean Prince is a big enough compensation for this, honestly. And so I think Prince is somewhere in the middle. He's probably a good enough defensive player to be like, hey, we can try you on a bunch of different guys and you're going to compete and you're going to be professional and you're going to give us a floor on that side that we are perfectly comfortable with or maybe even happy with. And offensively, you are a connecting player because of your shooting and your ability to drive closeouts and just the fact that you have a floor on that side of the ball as well, where it's just like, hey, like that's pretty good. And it's one of the reasons why they target Taurean Prince as a free agent signing, as someone who could be a rotation player who could likely play for them in a playoff series as one of their 8 or 9 best guys. So this isn't to disparage Taurean Prince. I'm also not going to disparage Rui Hachimura here because he's not a point of attack defensive guy where your team is going to struggle on that side of the ball because you're starting Rui. No, let's leave the because out of there. It's like Rui is a part of this and how you compensate for him as well is important, but you're not going to compensate for Rui by starting D'Lo and Austin, Mike. I just want to make sure that we're contextualizing this correctly.
It's an important clarification because we're certainly talking about Russell and Reeves when we talk about the importance of who that third player is. And to an extent, LeBron on a given regular season night. So the difference between LeBron against Brooklyn and LeBron against Portland, and LeBron was pretty damn good against Portland for almost the whole game. That's the kind of energy that he's brought to many games this year, which in itself is incredible for this you know unprecedented run that he's on at this age. I think that with the fatal flaw to me when we're talking about Prince as opposed to Vanderbilt or Hachimura is actually just the rebounding, because teams are going to get some good shots against this group. And they're going to hit some shots, but where the group with Prince and Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell and then LeBron on a given night, they're just going to get so many second shots when they miss their first shot. And that breaks the dam like that. That frustrates the team. You can see, just watch Anthony Davis, who's doing everything in these groups. And when the second offensive rebound on one possession is grabbed and the team gets an open three, AD is just looking around like, This doesn't work, guys. We have to have more size. And that both Vanderbilt and Hachimura do that. And that is not something that Taurean Prince does. And it's not a fault of his necessarily. Part of it's about size and physique and in the way that he's played over the years and what he deems as the priorities. But I just think that I'm not trying to make it this simple, Pete, but the rebounding aspect of it to me is just, I've seen it too many times where that it kills and deflates that group.
That deflating aspect, I think, is really important. And I think we saw that in the Brooklyn game. It didn't start out that way in terms of how things went sideways. I thought the group that started the second quarter, LeBron, D'Lo, Wood, I think Max was in that group, and Vando, god awful to start the second quarter. Just the energy level was super low. Cam Thomas came in the game in the back half of the first quarter and really, really lit it up. And there was just a level of disconnectedness that I think Mike's totally right about those momentum plays where you give up that second offensive rebound and then you become in that state where it doesn't really matter what type of defense you're playing because you're not mentally paying attention enough to run it well. And so this is what I was saying the other day, of like, you can look disinterested and disorganized in a 2-3 zone. You can do it in a man. You can do it while going under screens, while going over them. But when a team reaches that state, that is something that precedes any schematic or even lineup type of things. And so that level of dispiritedness, I think, is really important to avoid, especially at this point of the season. We're going to talk a little bit in the third segment about the shot of Rui throwing the LA signs and D'Lo on the bench. But the spirit of this team, D, I think, is in a critical place in terms of that it's important to get on track and get some momentum fairly soon, or else it might go sideways. And so I think that being bigger, not giving up those type of plays where Anthony Davis or you know, where AD's like, fuck, man. And I think that that's really important to be able to get the season back on track.
It's done.
Connor McDavid, it's not real.
The goal of the year. Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, win. We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I also think it's important just to even get away from those individual plays and just think about like what animates players and what do they enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of conversation this year, mostly from the head coaches about, but also from the players about like, well, we want to be great on defense. We need to be great on defense. We want to be great on defense. But then there's also these other comments that come at it from, well, we want to put as much skill and offense around our two captains, right? Which was sort of the reasoning that was put forward around the latest lineup change. And I'm moving more towards the opinion that there are not enough natural defensive players on this team for defense to be your identity. And that if you want to get good defense out of this team, it's likely going to need to come from the idea that they're animated on offense. Mm-hmm. And being animated on offense, you can do that in a variety of different ways. And I think it's one of the reasons why Mike was saying that we could likely come up with different lineups for the group. Mike had texted last night during the thread where the Lakers had struggled in those Austin as the only guard minutes. And then they put D'Lo in to close the first quarter. And then that group started to play better. And this was actually a stretch where both LeBron and AD were off of the court. And so it's like Wood and Vando and D'Lo and I think Max and it must have been Cam at that point.
It could have been Rui too. But that group started to score, but they started to score because they got turnovers and Vando was being super active defensively. And so there's plenty of ways to animate your offense. And some of it is going to come from those defensive groups, Pete, but I just wanted to run off a couple of quick numbers here. The starting lineup with Rui in it instead of Prince, last season they played 10 minutes together and they had a net rating, 10 minutes together during the regular season, and they had a net rating of plus 45. In the playoffs, they played 32 minutes together, and they had a net rating of plus 47.5.
This season, they have played 16 minutes together, and they have a net rating of 37.5. Their offensive rating, just so you know, in those 16 minutes this season, is 162.5. So I'm just going to say this team is not going to score 162.5 points per 100 possessions with this starting lineup out on the court. I can pretty much speak to that with some authority. But this group now, over the course of a season and a half, and approaching 70 minutes or so, including 30 of them, like in playoffs. which are higher leverage minutes, they've been pretty damn good together. And I might argue giving them more time together is probably a good idea in a way to not only animate your offense, but animate your defense.
Yes, but have you considered Torian Prince and Cam Reddish?
Let's talk about Cam for a second.
He looked really good. He moved a lot better last night. He stopped being that disruptive force on defense right when he got the groin injury. Like, duh. I'm saying that duh to myself, right? Like, because there was a good stretch of a month where I was like, man, Cam is not making things happen on defense. He looked like he was making things happen last night. And to that point of combined force, D, on the offensive end, we're talking about you just kind of run out of guys. If you've got Cam Reddish pressuring the ball, and then Jared Vanderbilt shooting a passing lane with Anthony Davis on the back line to protect anything that gets past them, there's a combined force there on the defensive end where you got to make that pass, and it's got a little bit more arc on it because Reddish has got active hands and he's stayed with you, navigating screens, he's stayed attached. And then Vando is always great at shooting that passing lane, but the combined force of that is where you're really in business. And so I was excited to see that.
Well, it's like a football team, right? Where Cam is the guy who's on the defensive line trying to get after the quarterback and force a quick throw. And if he throws it too early over the middle, then here comes Jared Vanderbilt from a linebacker position. Yep. And it's just like, nope, I'm swooping in and knocking this ball away or stealing it. And if Vando gets beat, then on the back line, you've got this great safety who is playing like center field, like on the back line. And it's just like, oh, well, you're not getting past me then. And that defensive identity of those second groups, it can be something when all of those guys are healthy. And that's why, again, this isn't to disparage Prince. Like, I think Prince gets I was down on Prince to start the season, and it was mostly because you're telling me this guy is good on offense and he's shooting 29% from three, like, and missed basically every momentum three that the team needed. It's just like, at some point, this guy is going to have to start hitting shots. And right when I was just like, get him out of here, he's just like, hey, I'm back. I'm going to make 15 of my next 23s. And it's just like, oh, okay. Well, if you're going to shoot at a 40% clip, essentially, then this is the guy that's going to be useful. Last night, I think, or against Portland, it showed that this team, when healthy and fully revved up, they have the ability to be more than one thing, which I think is super important. And without Prince's sort of in-between game, they were just like, all right, we're going to lean all into bully ball with the starting group. And they played well. And then they're going to lean into these more defensive-oriented groups with these bench units. And those groups mostly played well, too. And it's just like, okay, well, that's not to say Prince doesn't fit in, because he does, obviously. It's just a matter of having these multiple looks, Mike, that you can go to. I think that's the best version of the Lakers. And I think having a real identity at the beginning is important to that. And I like this bigger group to say, this is our identity. You don't have enough front court guys to guard all three of LeBron, AD, and Rui.
I think we've been pretty clear all year about the preference for the bigger groups. That's been a theme, certainly, on the Laker Film Room podcast. And that might not be what it is against the Clippers. If Torian Prince is healthy, as Pete alluded to this earlier, then it might go back to that group with, you know, Austin and D'Lo and Prince and then LeBron AD. And I will say that if you go back to the OKC game and the Dallas game, it worked to an extent when that group came out and had proper defensive energy and intensity, and Austin Reeves is doing little stuff and LeBron is engaged there and they're kind of gang rebounding, and then you kind of, the offense looks pretty good and the spacing is there and you get through 6 minutes and then the bigs come in, you know, and then you switch the game in that way. So I do think that it's possible for that group to work. I think that it comes down some to matchups. Like if you're playing a certain team in a playoff series, if you're playing Denver or Minnesota, you're just not starting Torian Prince at the three. You can't. If you're playing OKC, you can, because they're small. Or if you're playing Dallas, you can, because they're small. So that, and I honestly don't see any reason not to do that as the regular season goes on. Like, hey, it's our bigger group with Rui. Now, maybe that's hard on like on Hachimura or Vanderbilt or Prince to be yanked around a little bit like that. And maybe you do in a regular season like to maintain a certain level of it. But I just, I don't want to dismiss that they very well just may go back to what it was there. And then you're, what we just talked about is moot in some ways about what the second group is going to be. And, you know, you also can't play 10 guys, I don't think. And so then who's going to get trimmed? Is it going to be Max? Is it going to be Cam? I don't think it's going to be Torian Prince. So that could switch how that looks as well.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Mike, because I do think that that's a viable look in certain situations, and it's shown to be that. I do think, though, throughout the course of an 82-game season, that most other teams start their biggest group. We're somewhat unusual in going with a smaller group first and then going bigger in the middle parts of the game. That's the opposite of what most teams do. And so in terms of getting through an 82-game season, when you combine that with some of the defensive weaknesses that are there, too, on the perimeter, I think it can lead to they're either looking great on offense or they're demoralized because they can't get a rebound and AD's wrestling with three guys under the basket trying to get a rebound half the time. So I don't want to act like that's a terrible look and you can never play it or anything like that, because it has been good and it's certainly gotten better throughout the course of the season. I just think that that's probably closer to a closing group, which is what usually happens. For example, the 2020 team would start JaVale, but JaVale would never close. It would always be a Kuz or a Caruso off the bench or somebody that was a little bit smaller and more skilled and most importantly, faster on defense and able to defend the perimeter. And so I do think it's a viable look. I just think it's at a different point of the game. You had brought up before the pod, if we transition, yeah, sort of the vibes of the team, that there's a lot of questions from the fans and a lot of theories. And so we got the, so go ahead and set that up for us.
No, I just think it's interesting because you're talking about vibes right now about like, oh, mystery bounds and this, this, that, and the other. But it's like the team is coming off of a really rough stretch. And then they started to play a little bit better. And then they had a bad loss against Brooklyn. But then they had a really good win against Portland. So, you know, after wins, I like to get online. I like to see what people are saying. I like to sort of get a sense of where people's heads are about the team. And look, maybe it's just the dumb For You tab that's on Twitter or whatever, but I was getting fed a bunch of stuff about, like, why does Rui look like he's in a proof of life video or clip right here, throwing up the LA hands, and he looks despondent a little bit, and clips of D'Lo on the bench after the game. People were running these clips back where he's like rubbing his eye a little bit, and he looks sort of just sort of staring out into space.
It looked like a guy who scored 34 points in a blowout win.
That's exactly right. And so I was just like, are the vibes bad, or is this just like random, like one picture or 7 seconds of video framed around a particular way within commentary with the tweet on top basically saying like, what's wrong with Rui, or what's wrong with D'Lo? Does he know something that we don't? Is he getting traded like right now? Did he get traded already? It's sort of like a lot of this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know how real any of this stuff is or isn't. I'm the furthest one away from the team out of the three people that are sharing this podcast right now. And so I just wanted to kick it back to you guys about whether or not you think that this is not necessarily a real thing, but like the sort of balance that things can hang in sometimes, and whether or not we make too much of stuff like this in the first place, and where your guys' heads are at around the vibe stuff to begin with.
There are always things going on with every team, some good, some bad. But the way that what you're describing, I have missed, and I think intentionally so. So I don't love the reason I said
you're just not close enough to the action, Mike. You know.
Well, I did the interview with a guy who apparently now is somebody else sent me this, who apparently was saying I was there. Like, I talked to him in front of him, and then I talked to him after, off the record. So I think that you, Darius, have just described a major issue just with society in general in 2024, and forget sort of the sports element of it, where if you want to find something You can with social media, and there's going to be a freeze frame, and there's going to be a quote, and there's certainly something, and we're all detectives apparently now, and can dissect what's going on. And the reason why it's tough to dismiss completely is because people are complicated, and if your name does show up in a trade rumor, there are things that D'Angelo Russell has said this year that you could kind of parse and be like, okay, well, is he happy with this? And he's told us these things, and so has Darvin Ham. He just said two games ago. Yes, guys. Yes. I don't know what I'm sort of pushing back against, and how you want me to answer the question. But I think if you're asking, was there too much being made of reactions to certain guys, and in this case, D'Lo, and then while I was talking here, I just Googled the Rui Hachimura thing and looked at the photo. And I am wholeheartedly willing to dismiss as being nothing. So. Maybe Pete, you should come in and clarify things some, but I'm not sure I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be commenting on.
There's an entire economy built around covering sports, right? Like, it's people's jobs. It's how companies make their money. And so if there is D'Lo looks sad on the bench, there's money to be made from selling the drama. And it's also very easy to take little bits of information. And like you said, Mike, just put together the story that you want to put together on it. Again, that said, like, have the vibes been bad to a degree? Of course, we're 22-22. D'Lo's in trade rumors. This is that time of year. It's actually not terribly uncommon that a team this is that time of year for a lot of different teams, right? Where somebody's involved in a trade rumor and you're like, am I going to be here?
Like the two that the Lakers just faced. Portland and Brooklyn. But my guess is that there aren't that many deep dives that people are profiting from on the various free friends of what was going on with. Yeah.
There aren't 130,000 likes to be had because freaking Spencer Dinwiddie looks sad on the bench for the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, because DeAndre Ayton.
That gets 500 likes.
Yes. Me and Mike covered maybe DeAndre Ayton getting trapped in his house because of the ice gets 130,000.
Right.
But not because he looks sad on the court or is frustrated on the bench.
The players playing in the games, we can sense some of that from, like, D'Angelo's play dropped significantly in December. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, and I think a lot of that was tied into it. And now he's playing very well. He met with Darvin Ham. The energy between LeBron and D'Angelo Russell has completely flipped in a positive way. We saw in the game with how they were interacting with each other. So he has figured something out, and that is evidenced by the basketball, whereas DeAndre Ayton has not, you know, and that is evidenced by the basketball. That's all. And the stuff I can give you all kinds of stuff that you don't see, that plays into one side or the other and argue it well. Mm-hmm. But the basketball is really what reveals, I think, how things are.
One of the things that I would say about D'Lo too, Pete, is I feel a very chip on his shoulder version of D'Lo right now that was noticeably missing during the time where he was slumping. And he's talked a fair amount about confidence, but the idea that he was basically telling us a little bit post-game about, like, yeah, I talked to the coach. Yeah, I told him, like, you can trust me to go out there and do the things that this is how I think I can help. These are the things that you can trust me to do. And basically, I'm going to go out on the court and show you. There was that quote that D'Lo had when he walked into postgame after he had skipped media after the two wins and was just like, I heard y'all were looking for me. And that's sort of this idea of, like, him making a joke a little bit, but also like a little bit of, oh, you want to talk to me? I'll talk. And that idea of I'm going to be on the court too, and I'm going to show you that side of my game as well. It's super important for the success of this Lakers team and for D'Lo to play with a little bit of an edge, Pete, because when he's not the best athlete, he is not the quick twitch guy that is just going to get by you and dunk it. And so he needs to have a little bit more, whatever gets his engine revving to a certain level, I think is super important.
He had a really interesting post-game quote. I think he's one of the more interesting interviews we've had on the team in a few years. And he was talking about how every player in the NBA has a superpower, right? They have something that they are especially good at and some aspect of the game that they can leverage their impact on the game through that. And he was talking about his ability to get hot. He was like, ever since I was a little kid, I could go out there and I'd hit a couple shots in a row and then it's on fire. And so within that comment, though, he said that he'd come to the realization that the best way to compliment LeBron and AD is actually to be really aggressive as opposed to deferring to them, which is a super common and difficult thing to balance. And so that realization, he's shot 20 shots four times this season. Three of them are in the last 8 days. And so him kind of coming to some realizations, and I thought it was the wrong move to bench him in the first place. You guys know I send you lineup data all day long, every day throughout the text thread. And he's throughout his entire time here, going back to last year, been legit one of our best plus minus guys. We're better when he's on the floor and we're a lot better when he's playing well. And so I think facilitating that as opposed to when he goes through a slump of five games, and obviously December was a longer slump than that. But half of that was he was benched. It didn't take very, very long for him to come off of the bench. And so anyway, we got to wrap up here. But lots of things going on in Lakerland. Never a dull moment. We got the Clippers tomorrow. We will not be recording tomorrow, but we will be back on Wednesday. So until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddy pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.